Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Saturday, July 16th. I'm here with Matthew Blumberg, and we are live with our very first video episode. Matt is coming to us live from Paris. Matt, how you doing, brother?
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
I'm doing Tlavion. It is amazing here.
All right, you already lost
I'm
me.
I'm here for...
You already lost me.
I'm here for ETHCC, the Ethereum Community Conference, which is an annual conference of Ethereum builders and others in Paris. This has been a surprisingly difficult one to get my friends to FOMO into. Por example, croissant over here. But it's just fantastic. I've had so many croissants, so many baguettes, and life is good.
All right, Matt, what's going on in crypto this week? What did we miss? Let's recap the week for our listeners. What are we going to get into?
This week, we got a few pretty cool things to get into. So first is the merge getting sort of a little bit more formalized predictions around the date. So we're no longer saying in quarters. Now we're saying in weeks or months. Mm.
So that's the merge is happening. CPI is still high. 9.1% for our CPI number for June. Starkware launching a token. Three Arrows Capital still in bad shape. Celsius going bankrupt. What else happened? Oh, Pudgy Penguins are breaking out. what else happened? Disney NFTs. We're going to get into all of this stuff. Where do you want to start, Matt? Let's start with the merge. When's the merge happening?
So we saw like a successful testnet merge of the Sepolia testnet last week. And now that that's kind of out of the way, we can get a little bit more concrete with our timing around the next testnet merge and then finally the mainnet merge. So the next testnet is Gorli. And this is the one that's going to be like actively supported following the merge.
Okay.
So if you're like a builder, like you try to deploy everything on a, you know, first on a local blockchain to run all your tests, then you can deploy everything on a testnet where like you can just get free ETH and all that. Just like make sure that things are kind of functioning as expected if your contracts like touch other deployed contracts. And then you finally like deploy your contracts on mainnet. So we've done a couple of testnet merges now, both successfully or relatively successfully. And so the upcoming one is Gorli, which is the last public testnet to like run through the merge. So that one will merge around August 11th. Mm. And then just given like the historic timelines around how long it takes to merge the next one, that would put the mainnet merge about 5 weeks later, like the week of September 19th. As you may remember, I actually made a bet with a friend around the timing of the merge. So I was being a little bit pessimistic, and I said if the merge happens before June 30th, 2023, I will buy my friend a crypto dick butt. And if it happens after, then he owes me one crypto dick butt. I'm thinking I'm going to start hedging this one out.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so with these testnet merges, how exactly does it happen? Is it like on a 5 week basis where they're going like one after the other? Because I know what happened, like Roopston happened a month ago-ish. So how exactly does this work? And also, why do they need to do all of the different testnets? Like, why do they need to test the merges at different times?
So basically in order to like merge, an Ethereum blockchain, you have to go through a couple of different steps. So the first is like deploying the Beacon chain, which like happened, over like a year and a half ago now for mainnet ETH. But for each of the testnets, they're just like setting up the Beacon chains like ad hoc. The second thing that needs to happen is an update that tells the client software to like start listening to the like proof of work chain. And then the third update that they need to release is another hard fork that tells the client software when to expect to start listening to the proof of stake blockchain rather than the proof of work blockchain. So each of these three steps just historically has happened a week or two apart from one another. And so that's why you sort of start to see this cadence of like once every 4 or 5 weeks. Sepolia, they set up the Beacon Chain in advance of the Rupestyn merge. And so like that's why you're able to see like a little bit tighter timing.
I see. And so are these different groups, like different developer groups that are managing the different testnets, or is it all the Ethereum Foundation, or what's going on
there? So the testnets themselves are like any blockchain, they're like decentralized, right? But
like any blockchain
instant. like any real blockchain, except like for these test nets, right? Like there's all sorts of weird stuff that can happen just because like hash rates are generally so low because like no one's actually incentivized to run miners or validators. And so like for Sepolia, for example, if you wanted to run a validator, you had to actually be allow listed by the Ethereum Foundation. And so it's like a bunch of like ecosystem partners basically that are running it. The Ethereum Foundation is probably running some, you know, like I wouldn't be surprised if like Coinbase is running some, just like ecosystem partners that they can trust to like not turn their validators off the day before the merge. Cause like there's no economic incentive if you get slashed, right?
Yeah. So it's not really decentralized, but whatever. It's a testnet. Nobody cares. Anyways,
the people that are actually learning from the merge are the client teams. So like currently we have Geth, right? And, the other one, and so these are like pieces of software that you use to actually keep track of the state of the blockchain. If you're mining, you use them to mine. And the client development teams, there's several for like post proof of stake, post merge Ethereum. And they're the ones that are learning from the testnet merges. So each time there's a testnet merge, they track it to make sure that like everybody's client software works, right? Like there are tests that you write for it to make sure that it'll work in theory, but the only way to really know is like in practice. And so, you know, like the first, like the Rupestyn merge, like there was a client or two that like had the wrong parameters configured in their software. And so they wound up like not producing blocks or whatever. And so each of these testnet merges is a chance for them to like double check that they haven't missed any bugs.
Okay, I see. I guess the big question remaining at this point is just with the mainnet merge, with everything you've seen so far, all the reactions from the developer community, do you expect anything to go wrong with the merge at this point?
No, I don't expect any major hiccups. The one thing that's going to change that like we really haven't been able to test so far is MEV. So like Flashbots has been like hard at work building a post-merge version of their software that you can use today to extract MEV as a searcher. And to my knowledge, like nobody's really been using that in any of these test nets because like there's no value to extract, right? And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with things like liquidations, right? Like that's where I think we might see like a bit of a speed bump or a hiccup. Like it shouldn't last more than a few days because the incentives there are so strong to build out, the systems that you're using, right?
Couple more liquidations than else, up like, only. Is that what you're saying?
Couple more liquidations than up only.
Okay, cool. That's a great breakdown. Is there anything else we need to know about the merge that's been publicly stated so far, recently at least?
No, I mean, we should all be paying attention to the all core devs calls. So these happen like monthly.
Don't worry, Matt. Nobody's going to be paying attention to that. That's why they listen to our recaps.
they're pretty silly. But then post-merge, we have like one more hard fork. And that is the hard fork that allows for your ETH to be like unstaked from the Beacon Chain and brought into like the main chain.
And that's going to be like 6 to 12 months has been, after the merge, right?
Yeah. Like the EF's been like super loud that like this is going to be the next one because people need to feel that like, you know, a lot of people out there are probably thinking, wait, the merge happened. Why can't I withdraw my ETH, right? And so those people need to be like assuaged and like know that like for sure their ETH is going to be unstakeable someday. So that's what's next on the roadmap.
Alrighty. The merge is coming, folks. All right, Matt, it is time for America's favorite segment, the FOMO of the week. There's a lot of FOMO this week. The charts look pretty wild. Woke up this morning, things were all calm, and then there's just an uptick everywhere across the board. But things have been pumping kind of all across the board this whole week. So to you, Matt Blumberg, first, what is your FOMO of the week?
Well, somewhat related to our merge segment, my FOMO of the week is Lido DAO. Lido DAO token, LDO, which is up a cool 80% over the last week, probably more by the time you hear this, listener. And this
All right, what is Lido, Matt?
Lido operates something called liquid staking. So you stake your ETH with Lido, and they issue you ST ETH. You know, you can use that ST ETH to, like, you know, participate in DeFi, lend it out, whatever. And it's like an IOU.
Yeah, listen to our deep dive ETH on the merge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's something like, what is it, like 20% of the total staking volume right now is run through Lido, might be higher. And so they've committed to, like, being super relatively decentralized. So Lido doesn't actually operate the nodes that you stake with. They delegate it to, like, approved, you know, validator operators. I guess this is just more bullish sentiment around the ETH merge coming through sooner rather than later. And so Lido DAO token up a cool 80%. I think it could run further here. Like, its market cap is several hundred million. It's not that big yet. And relative to, like, the level of importance that it plays within the post-merge Ethereum world, I think it still has room to fly.
And what are the tokenomics here? Like, what is the incentive to buy and hold Lido?
There's none. It allows you to sort of control the DAO, right? It's the same as any other valueless governance token. Yeah.
VGT Capital.
VGT. Like the tokenomics isn't super. It doesn't allow you to capitalize on Lido's growth or anything like that. But that hasn't stopped anything from pumping before.
Look, we're not here to give financial advice. We're just here to show and tell what's happening with the pumps in the market. That's why this is the FOMO of the week. Okay, interesting. So you think Lido could run a little bit more, huh?
I think so. At the current state, there's still 2 more months at least until the merge happens, even given, like, the most optimistic estimates. Not that many people are actually paying attention, right, to the timing of the merge and the, you know, testnet merges and all that.
Argue they are because the token's up 80% this week.
Yeah. You could. But I still think that, like, relative to, like, a lot of things, like, its fully diluted valuation, I think, is like $1 billion, right?
I don't think it's even that. Look, I mean, if you look at the value of the protocol, it's got to be, what, top 5, top 10 in all crypto. Yeah. It's one of the most used applications. Is it a protocol, more of an application, I guess, but anyways, it's very, very valuable as a service, but where that value accrual goes, like, whether that goes to the token holders long term, I don't really know, right? Like, I think token design is a really interesting thing because, like, we were talking about Serum before the podcast, and, like, there are things that have just such, just almost like nefarious token design where it's like this thing is just, like, engineered to go down. Where Lido, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that, like, as somebody who's looking at this as a non-speculator, and I'm not necessarily a non-speculator, but I just, like, don't know why you would buy this thing outside of just assuming it's gonna pump because, like, Kobe is involved or whatever.
Why does anybody buy anything?
What, non-sovereign assets? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm fully with you. I love Lido. Look, you can ask Anurag about this. Me and Anurag were in early on the Lido trade. I love this thing. I guess I'm just bearish on valueless governance tokens, but it pumped 80% this week. So look, I'm the idiot.
That's why it's the FOMO of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which,
my FOMO of the week, the Pudgy Penguins, baby. Talk about being a non-speculator. Oh man, dude, I bought the top, the like exact Pico top on these last year. And
where were they?
It's just
in
been
ETH terms,
down,
you
like, I don't know, 3.5. This is when ETH was at its peak, like $4,000 for ETH. So, you know, I dropped a pretty penny on these things, bought more than one, was just chilling on them. I was like, look, this is the cutest thing. This is actually good art. You know, this is like an OG community. There's so many crypto native people involved. It has to be, this is the next one, you know? And
they're going to make a video game or something?
Oh, I don't even care about any of that. I was like, look at how cute it is. Look at who was talking about this on Twitter. I was like, this has to be the one, you know? And then everything just tanked. And I obviously sold at the bottom because that's what I do. And then the Penguins decided to completely just storm back. There was all this crazy drama with the founder, this guy Cole Therium. He's like some scammer, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Everybody's a scammer now, but like this guy, I guess like people hate this guy. So then they kicked him out of the community. Some other guy named Luca Nets came in and bought the whole collection for like $2 million. He's putting a new team in place. Then the Pudgies, this is why they're ripping this week. They announced this thing called the Penguin Factory. Is that what it's called? Where you can like design your own penguin and like you can have like a physical penguin.
Well, they signed a deal with like a major toy manufacturer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this manufacturer has produced toys for like big brands before. And so the idea is you'll be able to like license out your penguin for toy deals.
Nice.
Who knows?
This is not great for our bet. Where we bet on the price of Luna over under 90 bucks a year from now. I took the over and the bet was a Pudgy Penguin. So I owe Matt a Pudgy Penguin.
Look,
I only have one now.
It remains to be seen, right? Because I took the bet, but then I hedged it by buying Luna. So who's the real winner here?
Who's the real winner? The real winner is Do Kwon. yeah, so Pudgy Penguins went from what floor price of like 1 point. So at the low, they were like 0.7, 0.8, something like that. This is a couple months ago. And even more recently, like last week, they were in the mid ones. And now they're at like 2.9. Last I checked, 2.9. That was last night. So it could even be higher now.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
Pudgy Penguins. 2.7.
Oh, baby. God bless. So yeah, my FOMO has gone down just this much, but the FOMO persists. These penguins are going to rip, man. Jeebus, our favorite Twitter follow. This man is so high on the penguins. This guy literally tweeted out yesterday, it's hard to find an investment thesis for anything but penguins, TBH. It's like, look, man, who am I to disagree? So yeah, the FOMO of the week, America's favorite segment. Thanks for listening. Yeah, we're going to continue to just, you know, keep losing money on these dumb things. So, yeah, we'll be back.
Stay tuned.
All right, Matt, what else happened this week? Some fun stuff happened, like a lot of really interesting, like if you're still around right now, a lot of cool tech stuff is going on, which I think is going to lay the foundation for, you know, what is to come. The next bull market, as everybody likes to say. But yeah, let's get into it. So, where do you want to start?
Can we talk about the Starkware token?
Okay. I was going to say, let's go straight into it. Starkware finally announcing a token. Everybody kind of assumed this was going to happen at some point. Everybody assumes, I guess, this is going to happen for every L2. I think optimism really showed that after vehemently denying that there would ever be a token. And now they say that. They released one.
In crypto even broadly, like I feel like an important lesson to learn is don't underestimate people's ability to lie to you. That's what happened with optimism, right? I think the Starkware token was even more clearly going to happen just because they took so much funding, right? And it's like those investors have to exit somehow, and like token is easily the cleanest way to do that. This all started with Three Arrows Capital, Suzu, tweeting out that he didn't feel like the liquidators were really doing the creditors justice because they failed to exercise their warrant for Starkware tokens. And then like 4 hours later, we get this tweet thread from Starkware like, hey, so we're launching a token. it seemed like they had kind of been just set up where they had to announce it. And if you look at the tokenomics here, something like 49.9% of the token supply is allocated toward the developers, like the team building Starkware, and the investors, right? Which leaves 51.1% in the hands of other. It didn't seem like they were really doing an airdrop. And so it's probably going toward builder like incentives, right? Developer incentives to get people to build on their network. Starkware itself is like quite difficult to build on, because it's like they have this like ZK EVM, but it's not really an EVM. And so you have to learn a completely different programming language just to build it, right? Or to build on it. And that language is very difficult to use. So what's interesting about this to me is that unlike Optimism, it actually is going to be the native like gas token for their protocol, or for, you know, if you want to like interact with an app on Starkware, you're going to have to do it using the Starkware token, as opposed to like Optimism, where it's very clearly just a governance token. I think that's like a more reasonable model. Right.
So with things like this, right, like with Starkware, with even Solana, like Matic, you know, Polygon, Matic, like if the token is required to pay gas, right, but the gas is so low, and I assume that this is going to be the case with Starkware, like if the gas is so low that it's, you know, pennies or fractions of a penny, like how much, you know, is that going to cause the token to actually have buying pressure? You know, is it going to create like real demand there? Like with ETH, I get it, like you're gonna need it forever to pay fees, and the fees will, you know, even if they go down a little bit, like the ETH has moneyness, right? Like it has qualities of money that would make you want to buy and hold it. With some of these other things, like this is my like question I keep coming back to with Solana, like for myself, but like even with Starkware, it's like, you know, how much buying pressure does that really create?
Well, they can set the fees wherever they want, right? It doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be super low cost, right? They can have it avalanche level, where a transaction costs $5 instead of like 100, you know, during times
like what do you mean congestion. They can set the fees? Like they'll set them like manually in some way, or just gas like organically could go high, or?
Yeah, I mean, they can. They can, for example, set the maximum number of transactions that are allowed to happen in a given block or whatever. The way that like these zero knowledge proofs work is they're pretty computationally intensive to like generate the proof and publish it to the Ethereum blockchain. And so you need to incentivize people somehow to use their computing power to generate these proofs. So they can set that proof, even just proof level, they can set the fee wherever they want, right? Or like you could have validators that are like, I'm not going to generate the proof for less than X because my electrical costs are too high if I don't. My guess is it is going to wind up working out closer to like a Solana Polygon situation where, yeah, it doesn't really, like the thing about ETH as like gas, right? I don't know about you, but I've had several times that I've needed to buy a little bit more ETH just to like have enough, you know, ETH to pay gas fees, right? It's like driving a car. You're like, oh, I have to get to there. I need to fill up gas, right? And you're just like, you're just beholden to that, right? And so for us, it feels very real. That's never happened to me on Polygon, on Solana. Like once you have any, it's enough forever, right?
You know, it's really funny. I was about to say that that has happened to me on both of those chains. And it's also happened to me on like DFK chain and Avalanche, not because I run out, but because
you accidentally trade the maximum.
Do this dumb thing where I trade the whole, yeah, exactly. I trade the maximum. And so I have none left to, you know, even do a swap. But I have never one time, even like, it's never even occurred to me that let me buy this token on Coinbase or on some centralized exchange and then, you know, send it to my wallet. I literally just ping you or like one of my other buddies. I'm just like, yo, hey, man, send me some dust. Like, I got to do it, you know, because it's like, it's literally just dust for them. It's like, it's fractions of a penny. Just like, send me some dust. I can do the swap back and then I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm never going to actually buy more, you know?
It's the cold start problem, right?
Yeah.
Which is different from the like hot engine problem with ETH, where like you are running out constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, like, with something like Solana or Polygon or even Starkware, right? If you want to solve that cold start problem, these parties, you know, they have the financial capability to just like airdrop everybody who they want to be involved, like 50 cents, you know, and that's enough for them to be able to start interacting, especially on Solana, right? Like Solana or Polygon, like that's enough for a long, long time.
Yeah, you could airdrop everybody 0.5 cents, right?
Yeah, like whatever, right? And so like, you know, like that's not even going to require people to buy any. And, you know, if they ever need more, you know, if like they've already seen that, you know, 50 cents is enough to get me through. So like, I don't need to buy that much. So I don't know. I guess we're now in like deep like tokenomics discussions. This is like all I'm thinking about these days, but yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting development. And I like the fact that they are making it their gas token. Like DYDX just did this, you know, Starkware is doing this. I guess the bigger question also is who is actually going to use this now? Now that DYDX, their main application that was building on Starkware is gone. So I don't know. Do you see more traction from builders or projects that are getting involved or not really?
I mean, business development is like the most important thing that protocols and layer one or twos can be doing right now, right? I wouldn't be surprised if Starkware is working on a whole bunch of deals like behind the scenes to get people to sort of jump on board with using them as their dedicated layer two.
Yeah, but like you said, it's pretty hard to build on there, isn't it?
Yeah, but so here's the thing, right? Like DYDX was on there. They didn't build a single thing, right? Like Starkware Labs actually built the entire thing. So you know, the cold start problem, right?
Do it all for you guys.
Yeah, like this language is so domain specific that like it's easier and faster to just have Starkware Labs to even pay them just to build this thing, but they'll just do free because they need to drive activity, economic activity on their blockchain in order for their native token to be worth anything.
In order to pay back their investors. Interesting. Okay, that makes sense. When is this blessed event happening?
I don't know.
Next year? Early next year, 2023?
Dude, that's like forever from now. It could be bullish or bearish by then. We have no idea.
Yeah, we have no idea. Okay, cool. All right, let's move on. Kind of related, Aztec, another ZK-centric kind of DeFi application. They announced last week on the 7th, about 10 days ago now, that they are... What exactly did they announce? I feel like Aztec has been around for so long, but they announced that they're finally live now. They're like...
Protocol
is finally live now?
So it's a product called Aztec Connect, which is the bridge between Ethereum and Aztec. And so Aztec, just like quick recap, is like a privacy centric protocol where like their goal is to enable private DeFi transactions.
It's also zero knowledge base.
I'm not sure. I think it's closer to a secret network thing where it's based on like secure hardware, like the secure hardware enclave, Intel SGX. But don't quote me on that.
Yeah. I don't know. It says it says they're first ZK rollup on Ethereum, bringing confidentiality and cost savings to the Ethereum ecosystem.
Okay, so it is ZK.
Yeah, look, this is not the Aztec deep dive. But yeah, I guess it's kind of relevant to mention that they are live now. They said that they have 2,000 ETH shielded, is what they call it. So yeah, it's live on mainnet. You can use it.
I mean, it's pretty interesting, right? Because like, if you're an institutional player and you want to be executing things in DeFi, you don't necessarily want all of them to be fully on chain, right? It just puts you at risk of, like, if you're close to liquidation, like, people can see it or whatever, right? So, you know, what do you think? Do you think there's demand for private DeFi?
I would assume so, right? Like, if you look at a lot of, I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, most order books in the world are not public. So, and like most transactions in the world are not public, even like individual, like retail transactions. So I think the more, look, I'm a big like privacy fan in general. I think having the ability to transact privately is just a fundamentally, like, it's just like a foundational part of any financial system and really any society. You know, this is why we have cash, and this is why cash, I think, is a really important thing. But yeah, all that aside, I think that it's going to be hard to actually implement a lot of this stuff because, like, how do you bridge over? And I haven't tried Aztec's bridge yet, but, like, how do you bridge over? You're usually going to have to use, like, some, like, centralized bridge.
You have to trust Aztec.
Exactly. And to do that, you're going to have to, like, essentially dox your wallet, right? At least your ETH. You know, ETH wallet, like your public address. So, you know, and there's ways to make that private, but it's still, you know, it's like not a full stop solution, if you ask me. Like, this is not full privacy. This is just like a one more step, which is great, right? Like, I think eventually what privacy looks like is not this kind of full end to end, you just like black box kind of enter and it's fully private forever kind of thing. I think there are bits and pieces and different layers of privacy that get built out, and you can interface with all of those in different ways, and that creates this like whole big layer of privacy, and you can kind of access that and access different parts of that the way that you want to. So I think this is a great step. You know, we'll do a deep dive on this at some point, and we'll get, you know, we'll play around and we'll study it and we'll get in there. But I like the fact that people are focused on this, and in general, it seems like zero knowledge is finally starting to happen. Yeah, I guess that's really all I have there. I would love to see more and more projects get built on these like zero knowledge solutions. Like that, I think that's great.
Yeah, fully agree. Zero knowledge is the future.
Zero knowledge is the future of France. Okay, cool. Let's move on to some liquidations. Couple more liquidations, then up only. Three Arrows Capital. Liquidation update. This Goldman Sachs Twitter account, Soldman Gax.
Dr. Soldman Gax.
Dr. Soldman Gax. Can you read the tweet, please? Do you have it open?
Yeah, he says, I am a creditor to 3AC and an investor in Starry Night Capital. That's their NFT fund managed by NFT Vincent Vando. Feel free to follow me to get updates on the liquidation process and for insights along the way. Grab some popcorn and a beverage. It's going to be interesting. And so Soldman Gax posts some screenshots of some letters that he or she has received. And basically, there's something called a meeting of creditors that's supposed to happen on Monday the 18th. That's in a couple of days now. Okay. Where the creditors for 3AC get to come together, and I guess they all cry, they try to figure out like what assets are available for liquidation, and sort of like what's the ordering of creditors and like how do they get paid out. So generally speaking, like it's tiered, right? So there are like secured and unsecured lenders, and the secured ones get paid back first. Like if you had a collateralized loan out to Three Arrows, you already had your collateral, you were secured, you probably liquidated it a la BlockFi. Then you have the unsecured ones, and they're the ones that are going to get like whatever's left, the dust. And so part of that is the NFT portfolio, right? Which has like a huge number of like blue chip NFTs. And so given the state of the NFT world today, there's probably not a lot of people that really have a lot of liquidity left to deploy into buying like two CryptoPunks on the cheap or whatever. But if you're an outsider, now is an extremely attractive time to get into these blue chip projects. And you can get them on the cheap by participating in like the liquidation process. It'll probably be like an auction or something, right?
Just real quick. Let me paint the picture here from a true outsider's perspective. The biggest hedge fund in all of crypto blew up. They have a fire sale going on for a bunch of JPEGs they bought for millions of dollars. You, as an outsider, are coming in, seeing all this happen, the Lehman of crypto in 2022, and buying their JPEGs, buying their bags. How do you explain this to your wife or anybody that respects you?
It's a great entry point, right? Like a lot of people see JPEGs as levered ETH, right? And ETH is pretty low right now. I mean, before we started recording, it was really low. And it's at like 1350 now. Like it's an attractive time to buy ETH. The merge is coming. It's an attractive time to buy levered ETH in the form of blue chip JPEGs. The thing is that, yeah, they spent millions of dollars. But in ETH terms, many of their bags have suffered really, really hard, but a lot of them have not, right? And so this is really like an attractive point to enter ETH in general. That's sort of the thesis, right? But yeah, it's pretty, you know, when Starry Night Capital first happened, right, it was a really interesting story, right? It was a really interesting just even like thought experiment because like at the time I was relatively new to the NFT space. And so this experiment of like, we're going to start a blue chip NFT fund to buy and hold for the long term was like really, you know, really interesting just informing my perspective on the space because it sort of legitimized it as like a high-end art sort of asset class, right? Obviously it didn't work out great. Right. Especially because they're like denominated in ETH, which is super volatile. It turns out JPEGs are also super volatile. But I just thought it was an interesting thing that happened this cycle that will really come to like define one of our memories of it is Starry Night Capital.
Do you think NFT funds come back?
Yes and no, right? So I could see like an institutionalization of like liquidity provision, especially in the space, because these markets are so, so illiquid. It's a little bit like emerging markets, right? Where like, you know, if you're trading emerging markets in like the 90s, there was like the spreads were so wide that like even just making markets there was enormously profitable, right? Obviously they're super risky, but I do think that we'll start to see more people say, taking like raising a fund in dollars and like hedging out their ETH exposure and then just looking to stack ETH as a result. I think I could see that. I could see that growing, right? But I think buy and hold long-term JPEGs, I wouldn't invest in something like that because they're so heavily sentiment driven and the effect of supply is infinite, right? So the comparison that I'll make is something like Bitcoin. With Bitcoin, it's like you can ride out the volatility because you know that Bitcoin's coming back, right? There are a limited number of Bitcoin that can be minted. Yes, you can copy paste the entire Bitcoin code base and, you know, release Dogecoin or Litecoin, right? But neither of those is Bitcoin. So theoretically, yeah, internet like hash powered internet coin supply is infinite because you can just copy paste Bitcoin. But But in reality, like, it's a shelling point, right? Like, it's the Lindy effect. Like, Bitcoin is the only one that is Bitcoin. In JPEGs, it's much more difficult, right? Because there is no Bitcoin of JPEGs. And that's really the only one that you could really seek to hold for the 10, 20 year horizon, in my opinion.
I think the punks.
The punks, kind of. But what about the apes, right? Like, in market cap terms, they're bigger.
Fuck the apes.
It's not like the apes or the punks have, like, the market dominance that Bitcoin has, right? Neither of them is. I mean, the punks are older, right? But, like,
actually, Yuga probably does, because just looking at them combined, they own both.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, no, that's a good point. You see what I mean, maybe here, nouns. Right? Like, especially nouns, like a Maxi. maybe nouns, right? Just yeah. The sheer size of their treasury. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, even. Like, we wouldn't have this conversation about Bitcoin. We'd be like, Karan, what's the dominant fungible token? You'd be like, Bitcoin.
You know what's next funny? Question, you know what's funny, right? Though? People were having this conversation in, like, 2011, 2012, 2013. You can read the Bitcoin forums, and people were looking at it as, like, oh, why not, like, Namecoin? Or, like, you know, why not, like, all these other things? Like, people were having that conversation. Like, you can see exactly where, like, a new technology gets introduced. Like, it's so funny to see all these things repeat exactly over and over, right? So it's like Bitcoin comes out in 2008, 2009, and then, like, 2010, 11, 12 is all these, like, Bitcoin forks. Like, Litecoin came out in that time, or, you know, 2012, 2013, it came out. Dogecoin came out in that time. All these, like, kind of Bitcoin forks came out. And then, you know, of course, in the wave after that, like, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin SV, Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin Gold, all these forks, right? But then a true fundamental innovation happened in Ethereum in 2016. And then you saw that blow up, and then a bunch of people copied that, right? And it's like all these, like, basically copy pastas, or like these, like, L1 wars follow. And it's like Solana and Avalanche. And, you know, even before that, there was, like, the forks of Ethereum. And now you're kind of seeing that same thing with NFTs, where it's just like all this copy paste to try and find, like, the grails, you know, like, what are the things that are actually valuable here? And I think it's actually going to come, like, I think we'll see a bunch of this, like, up and down, and a lot of things being tried. And then I think it'll come back to, like, this kind of return to form, at least, like, this initial wave of what NFTs are. And I think it'll look a lot like the original projects, like the punks and the apes and nouns and things like that. But then I think there'll be another fundamental breakthrough, you know? And I don't know what that next thing is, but I think there will be one for sure. Just because, like, it's technology. That's just how it goes, right? But I don't know what that is.
Well, so we're kind of seeing that already in the markets over the last month or so with generative art, right? Like, it's been a very good time to be a holder of a Fidenza or Chroma Squiggle.
Art block season.
Yeah, it's art block season. But at the same time, like, those assets are not limited in supply, right? And there is no Bitcoin of art blocks. Like, you could argue it's Fidenza's, but in practice it's not.
Squiggles.
Right?
Crummy Squiggles first project.
You could argue it's Squiggles, right? But in practice, like, they don't have the market dominance that, you know, just in sheer market cap terms, that, like, you would expect of the Bitcoin of art blocks, right?
But it's an earlier market, right? Like, art blocks was created 18 months ago, and that's like being in late 2010 for Bitcoin, right? Like, the forks, I think, are just starting. Like,
do you believe that the Bitcoin of NFTs already exists or has yet to be minted?
Interesting. I don't think, like, it's a fair comparison, you know, like you said, because, like, everybody is like Bitcoin, you only need one. Like, there's no need for a second digital, like, whatever, like, fixed supply asset, right? Like, you don't need a second one. The whole idea of a fixed supply asset is there's only one. Like, it's a fixed supply, it's a scarce thing. So I don't think NFTs serve that same purpose, but I think, like, a very small subset of NFTs do. Like, so with, like, the punks, right? Like, I think the punks have solidified such a unique position in the NFT market, where being one of those 10,000 holders, it signifies that you're a crypto OG, basically. And, like, that's all it signifies, you know? It's like, you either were around for the old days, or you have enough money to be, like, try and, like, resonate with the people that were around in the old days. And there are so many people that were around from like the old days, basically, that if you don't kind of like align or match, like, you know, or kind of like fit in with those values, like you'll basically immediately be like called on it, or like kind of be a fish out of water, you know? And so they serve that purpose. Like, in a way, that is kind of like the Bitcoin. But then there's like a whole, you know, like the whole idea of NFTs is like this like community thing, right? It's like there's like a Bitcoin for everybody, right? So it's like, yeah, I don't know, for like a niche community of like weird stoners, like the Bored Apes will always just be that, and there will never be another, right? But then there's all these like copy pastes that are trying to replicate that, but they never will. But then there will be something else. So I don't know. It's like it's weird, weird kind of different dynamic that like almost is the same, but like is definitely not. I think the project that will do it is Nouns, because I think that was like the fundamental big innovation after all these PFPs, right? I think like Nouns is the biggest innovation in NFTs since, like, I don't know, probably since the CryptoKitties. Like, I think that is going to be the fundamental like big project down the line, because like you said, they have a 30,000 ETH treasury that they can sit on and like build a bunch of cool shit with. And I think that's going to proliferate for years and years and years. And it's going to create this like crazy, crazy, like zeitgeist almost around it. So and yeah,
their, my bet is their Nouns. One explicit goal is the proliferation of Nouns, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, definitionally, right, really angles them that mm-hmm. way. Whereas like the explicit goal of the Pudgy Penguins is a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in fact, like the more I think about Nouns, and I've been thinking about Nouns a lot recently for some reason, but I'm actually shocked that more projects haven't tried that kind of model. Like, I haven't really seen anything like that at all ever since. And I think like that like same kind of model, maybe we should do a deep dive on Nouns, but like that kind of model of like every single day, new auction, you know, kind of same thing, fixed supply. There's only one every day. And it does go forever, but like one every day, right?
Can we do the explain like I'm five? The Nouns, they have pictures, but do they also have a word associated with them? Like, is it a noun?
It is a noun. It's a person, place, or thing. It's a generative little like pixel art thing. It's like, I think it's like 32 by 32 pixels. And it's
disconnected
cool.
Like, from the word.
It is connected to the word. I think
in,
it's like
in theory, or like would a noun, like if today's noun is mountain, would the art be a mountain?
Yeah, basically. I think the art is actually the main thing. I don't think it says like, oh, this is a mountain or something like that. I think it's just like noun number 368 or whatever. And then they're drawn from like all these different characteristics, you know. It'll have traits just like a normal NFT. But the core kind of idea here is that there's one new noun auctioned off every single day. And anybody can bid on it. The winning bidder, you know, after 24 hours wins that noun. And that auction, it goes to the noun's DAO treasury. And that treasury is then used and can be like used for like grants and things like that to anybody that owns a noun. So if you own one of the like pieces, you know, like one of the nouns, then you have access to the treasury and you can propose things that basically advances like the noun's community. So that's kind of the core concept around like proliferating the nouns. It's like right now they've been doing this for like a year now. So there's like 300 something nouns, and yeah, their treasury, like each one has been going for like 100 ETH. Their treasury is like 30,000 ETH. So they're doing a bunch of cool stuff with that treasury that's like just starting now. Like there's people that are like, you know, like Robot Chicken, this movie. The directors of that movie are like trying to build a Nouns film, and they made a proposal in the Nouns DAO to like get funding for that film. There's a guy that just made a Nouns almanac. There's a guy that made like high-end designer glasses, like based on the Nouns glasses. So, like they just had like a Super Bowl commercial. So like stuff like that. I think there's going to be more stuff like that comes down the line. Like I think PFP, generative art, that was like the first kind of, those were like the two first waves. I think now it's going to be more community based, where it's like not just like community in air quotes, but like community as in like bootstrapping treasuries, bootstrapping like collective action. I think you can really do that with that model. So yeah, I could see that. I think it'll be punks and nouns. Fuck Yuga. All right.
Well, I agree. Anything else? Because Yuga's just like, they have to continue to do things. They have to continue to perform. They have a lot more opportunities to fuck up than
they're a production company now. Like, that's it. Yeah. Like, their production companies have lifespans of like 10 years. So,
the good ones.
The best ones run a couple decades, but that's kind of it. Yeah. Okay. Still a quick little rapid fire. We got a few topics here.
Stock Celsius.
I was going to say more wrecked. Celsius finally declares bankruptcy, kind of what everybody was expecting. Okay, people are pointing out, like, people are posting, there's like this very prominent photo of their balance sheet that people are posting. Just points out their assets and liabilities. Basically, it's pointing out that their liabilities are like $1.2 billion greater than their assets. So basically, they have debts of like $1.2 billion. Nobody, like, they're short that much money, right?
Yeah.
Now, that to me is just a lie. Like, it's not even $1.2 billion because it's counting the value of Celsius token as like $600 or $700 million. Like, sure, maybe that is it right now, but like, you can't sell that OTC and get that value right now. You can maybe get like, I don't know, half that. Like, who's going to pay you that money? So I don't know, like, that should probably be marked down to zero. I'm not an accountant, but like, how are you going to value the token of a company that's bankrupt at like $600 million? So dumb. Does that make sense to you?
Well, you know, in crypto, you're really reminded of this fact every day, which is that like, the value of something is what someone's willing to pay for it. And so, you know, if they were to start slowly liquidating, they could get more than zero value from it, right?
Would you pay more than zero for it?
I wouldn't, right? But there is a market that will pay that, right? Like, there's protocols. Uniswap. You can sell it on Uniswap for more greater than zero.
I mean, that's fine, but there has to be an actual buyer. Like, the buyer is not a robot. The buyer is a human.
In the Uniswap pool, we actually should have looked next time one of these things happens, we should look into it. In the Uniswap pool, say there's $10,000 of liquidity. Like, that's 10,000 right there, right?
No, I get it. Our listeners definitely know how Uniswap works, right? But like, my point here is they cannot liquidate $600 million at that.
Oh no, 100% they can't. Yeah.
Price. And like, anyways, the point being, they're short anywhere from $1.2 to $1.8 billion.
The bigger issue from my perspective is this $720 million in mining assets.
What does that mean?
So that's ASICs, right? That's like ASICs and power centers. Yeah. And like, look here, like, over the last cycle, Bitcoin mining had like a lot more access to capital than it had the prior cycle, right? So you could get loans against your ASICs. You could really lever it. You could buy ASICs with like 30% down, right? And you know, you get futures on it. So you get X million chips delivered next year, and you just put 30% down now. The market is flooded right now with ASICs because the constraining factors today are no longer mining hardware. They're like deals with local utility companies to access electricity at a reasonable price, and B, all of the peripheral electrical equipment. So things like transformers have been very, very difficult to get for like the last like 6 months or so, right? Mm. It's like supply chain. It's like the surrounding issues. It's no longer the actual ASICs themselves, which I would assume the $720 million in mining assets probably reflects what they paid for them, right? Which, you know, probably happened over the last 2 years. And it's probably primarily ASICs, because how do you value the value of like a future production or, you know, future electrical, you know, production, right? Like, If it's 720 million worth of like a deal that they struck with a local utility to get power at 3 cents a kilowatt hour, then like, yeah, it's worth 720 million. But if it's 720 million worth of Antminer S19s, like that's not, you know,
real hole is probably like 2 billion, maybe more.
Maybe more, yeah.
Which was the number that was reported in that like one article from the Block or something like that 2 weeks ago, where it was like, FTX saw Celsius's balance sheet and noticed a $2 billion hole and backed out of the deal. It's like, all right, even the feds are backing out now. All right, let's move on. Celsius is done.
They're going to 11, which means they're trying to restructure. And that's actually the token becomes somewhat important, right? It's a little bit like, what was the exchange that like got hacked and then issued everyone tokens? And then eventually, if you held it, like you were made whole again or better?
Bitfinex? No.
It was Bitfinex, right?
The Leo token, something like that.
Yeah, Leo token. Yeah. There's an end of the story that doesn't turn out terribly. But it's extremely unlikely, right? And who's going to fucking run Celsius? Like, who do you trust to actually run something like this ever again?
SBF. SBF or CZ. I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. This is just the never-ending saga here. It looks like now even Nexo could be next. Did you see the Nexo email that's been circulating?
Yeah, they basically it's full of shit, guys,
where? Oh, is it really just a Futter email?
Yeah, it's completely fabricated. Yeah, so there's this account Otter at like Otteroo or something.
Yes.
Has just been spreading Nexo FUD. Unclear forever, why, right? They're attempting to be the Fat Mantera of Nexo, and like just zero evidence, like. You know, just fully just spreading FUD, right? Interesting business model. Maybe we should try that one on the podcast. But like not docs, like Nexo is suing the account, which is an incredible thing that you can do. Like they wrote like a public cease and desist letter. And they were like, just please just stop lying, right? And the dude responds with a fabricated letter or a fabricated email that's like, hey, we see you're trying to like withdraw, but like, whoa, if you wait like a couple of days, you get more.
We'll
if
you stake you higher... your assets,
like, we've just like, we've gone ahead and like paused your, you know, we canceled your withdrawal just to like give you a couple of days to decide or whatever. And it's just like,
man,
total
Otter
bullshit.
Got me. I thought this was a real email. Wow. All right. Nexo, my apologies.
Look, they might still have issues, right?
I was gonna say solvent for now.
Solvent for now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all of us. That's actually a great name for a crypto podcast.
That is a great name for a crypto podcast. It's like the opposite of up only. okay, let's do an actual rapid fire, because that was not a rapid fire. Okay. OpenSea laying some people off. Very unfortunate. 20% of their staff. It's just been happening across the board.
Was that like two people?
Two people. It sucks. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess kind of expected. Like, OpenSea has been doing better than everybody else, but like, still, NFT volumes are down. They say they have enough money to stay alive for 5 years now at current volume. So. Should be
it's a little freaky when they mentioned like 5 year bear market.
Yeah, it's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I guess that's just like reasonable.
More NFT stuff. What is this Polygon thing?
Polygon announced that they're participating in, I guess Disney has some kind of incubator accelerator thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Very unclear what that means, if anything. But Polygon's pumped. I mean, it's up 20% on the week. Like outperformed all the blue chips. Let's talk more marketplaces. What about everyone's favorite NFT marketplace?
Oh, Coinbase. GameStop. NFT.
Coinbase GameStop, has an NFT marketplace. I didn't see a button on the website.
Dude, we launched Bill Murray NFT, sold out in 1 minute. Secondary sales going for up to 11 ETH or 18 ETH, I guess.
Interesting. Bro.
Bill Murray, my main man, breaking his social media silence with Coinbase NFT. Let's go. yeah, anyway, that was enough shill zone. GameStop launched an NFT marketplace. Super interesting. It is built on Loopring, LRC. They were actually going to be built on Immutable X for like the longest time. They had announced this partnership. They were going to use Immutable. And then I don't really know what happened where that fell through. But then they decided to go with Loopring.
I mean, when Loopring, it did fall through, GameStop sold their IMX tokens and it just like dumped the market. They were it was down like 20-30% like that day.
They didn't even wait to announce anything. IMX gave them a gift or like a grant of like many millions of tokens and they sold it the same day and just like market dumped. And yeah, it caused the whole IMX market to implode. Very interesting to see that they backed out there. And Loopring has been gaining some traction. I looked on the marketplace. Have you looked on there at all? Have you played around?
No, I haven't.
I don't recognize a single collection, as it should be. I mean, I've never gone on Loopring and like hung out there. But all this stuff is super interesting. The cool part that I thought was notable, GameStop has built their own in-browser wallet that like connects to Loopring and like lets you bridge over like very easily. I think that's how they got all this volume the first day. I'm still questioning whether that was real volume, but you know, we'll see how this goes. The projects don't look good. The website is fine, but you know, good for them.
I mean, amazing launch. To see a Web 1 company, right? That like announced that they were going to do a thing and then actually did it, right? Like, Web what's next? One, is Radio like Shack going to follow three. Through?
Yeah. I mean, look, man, GameStop is, I don't know, one of the faces of the digital revolution, I guess. Like, this is insane. Like, can you imagine everything that's been happening with GameStop the last 3 years? Now they have an NFT marketplace. Like, what a time to be alive.
100%.
Anything else you want to hit, Matt?
No, I think we pretty much covered it, right? Yeah, I'm just so. Really looking forward to ETHCC.
ETHCC, all my fam in Paris, hit up Matt, go hang out. Next ETHCC, we're going to have a decent crypto activation. There are rumors about that. You know, we had to pull out of this one, but, you know, next time we'll be there for sure. We'll be back early next week with another deep dive. Have a good weekend, everybody. Until then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.